Srimad Bhagavatam 10th Canto, Chapter 72, The Slaying of the Demon, Jarasandha, Text 6. Yudhisthira Maharaj speaking to Lord Krishna, presenting the program of the Rajasuya Yajna. Within your mind, there can be no such differentiation as this one is mine and that is another's, because you are the supreme absolute truth, the soul of all beings, always equipoised and enjoying transcendental happiness within yourself. Just like the heavenly desire tree, you bless all who properly worship you, granting their desired fruits in proportion to the service they render you. There is nothing wrong in this. Purport. Srila Sridhara Swami explains that a desire tree has no material attachments or partiality, but simply bestows its fruits upon those who deserve them and not upon others. Jiva Goswami Prabhupada adds that a desire tree does not think, this person is fit to worship me, but that other person is not. Rather, a desire tree is satisfied with all who properly serve it. And the Lord acts in the same way, as explained here by King Yudhisthira. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti adds that no one should accuse Lord Krishna of being envious of one person and showing favoritism to another, since the Lord is swa-sukhanubhuti, experiencing his own happiness within himself. He has nothing to gain or lose in relation to conditioned souls. Rather, he reciprocates according to how they approach him. Srila Prabhupada very nicely sums up this point as follows in his rendering of King Yudhisthira's statement. If one takes to Krishna consciousness, his life becomes fulfilled, both materially and spiritually. This does not mean that you, Krishna, are partial to the Krishna conscious person and indifferent to the non-Krishna conscious person. You are equal to everyone. That is your declaration. You cannot be partial to one and not interested in others, because you are sitting in everyone's heart as the supersoul and giving everyone the respective results of his fruit of activities. You give every living entity the chance to enjoy this material world as he desires. As the supersoul, you are sitting in the body along with the living entity, giving him the results of his own actions, as well as opportunities to turn toward your devotional service by developing Krishna consciousness. You openly declare that one should surrender unto you, giving up all other engagements, and that you will take charge of him, giving him relief from the reactions of all sins. You are like the desire tree in the heavenly planets, which award benediction according to one's desires. Everyone is free to achieve the highest perfection, but if one does not so desire, then your awarding of lesser benedictions is not due to partiality. Om Ajnanachivanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militanyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Gadara Sri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. This subject of whether the Lord is partial or not occupies the place of a prominent theme in Srimad Bhagavatam, because the demons are always accusing the Lord of being partial, and the devotees know the Lord to be impartial. How can there be such a disagreement? We can turn to the 7th canto, chapter 1 of Bhagavatam. The Supreme Lord is equal to everyone, in which Prichit Maharaj presents this issue to Shukadeva Goswami. And it's a hot issue, so to speak, in Prichit Maharaj's mind. He starts off the 7th canto with the query, Samapriya Sirhit Brahman Bhutanam Bhagavan Swayam. My dear Lord, Shukadeva Goswami, It is well known. Everyone knows. It is a fact that the Lord is equipoised. He's equal in all his dealings. All living entities are dear to him. He's the friend of everyone, equally. Everyone knows this. This is an established transcendental fact about the Supreme Absolute Truth, Brahma. Bhutanam Bhagavan Swayam. This is the way the Lord himself is. Yet, we have seen in the sixth canto that apparently the Supreme Lord has sided with the demigods against the demons. What's going on here? Prajna Maharaj, of course, is asking this question to stimulate discussion of the Supreme Lord and to clear any doubts that the audience may have. Therefore, as always, Prajna Maharaj presents himself as having a doubt. He goes on to say, this question is causing me some consternation. I do accept as a transcendental fact the Lord's impartiality. However, it does appear to our sense perception, to mundane sense perception, that the Lord is partial and can be swayed. The demons accuse the Lord of being fickle. And if you just hand him over the right offerings, hand over to the right offerings, he changes his mind. This is Hiranyakashipu's accusation of the Lord upon the death of his brother, Hiranyaksha. Vishnu is just like a child. You present a laddu to a child, and the child becomes completely swayed. You know the common story of a stranger approaching a child on the street and offering some candy. Here, take some candy. Now come with me. Maybe some of you had parents who warned you, don't take candy from strangers. Did you tell your kids that? So, Hiranyakashipu, as the Asuravarya, the best of the demons, naturally had that attitude. Why has Vishnu killed my brother? He's killed my brother because he's fickle. The demigods presented him a nice little gift, and Vishnu lost his balance and sided with the demigods and therefore killed my brother, my great brother, wonderful brother, who was so fond of sucking blood. Yes, he said like that, glorifying the qualities of his brother. Therefore, there's only one solution. I must sever the head of Vishnu. And when the blood drips out from Vishnu's killed body, that will please my brother, who was so bloodthirsty. Hiranyakashipu was so angry at this point of the Lord's being partial, as he saw it, that he would stare at the sky as if he was looking up to Vaikuntha, and his stare was so angry, so intensely angry, that the sky would smoke and smolder from the heat of his glance upwards. Vishnu. The sky would actually smoke and become like wood about to burst into flames. This is how angry he was. He was convinced the Lord is partial. And the devotees are convinced the Lord is impartial. To clear this doubt, or to handle this controversy, which we all should become interested in, because it's prominent in Srimad Bhagavatam, and also it is a prominent issue within us, whether we want to face it or not. Therefore, Prajna Maharaj presents to Sukadeva Goswami, here is the situation. What our mundane perception perceives and what the transcendental fact is, which I do accept. Now please, Sukadeva, give us positive evidence. This is the way of spiritual discussions. Pramana, positive evidence from the authorities, always is presented to clear any doubts. So what does Sukadeva Goswami reply with? Sadhu Prishtam Maharaja Harish Charitam Adgudam. O Maharaj, O great king, your question is excellent. Sadhu, excellent. Krishna Maharaj. Harish, Charitam Adbhutam. Your question stimulates discussion of Lord Hari. And when there is discussion of Lord Hari, there is a suspension or cessation of material misery. The Srimad Bhagavatam is full of these discussions of Lord Hari, Shikhanay Goswami went on to explain. Therefore, let me discuss with you Srimad Bhagavatam as presented to me by my father, Dvaipayana Vyasadeva. Let me first take shelter of my father, take his blessings, and then I'll speak to you on this issue. Let us discuss partiality and impartiality. Now, generally when you think of that issue, you're not connecting the issue to the type of body someone has. Remember, spiritual existence means the body, which you are, your spiritual form, and material existence means the body, which you are not. So, you cannot analyze this issue of partiality or impartiality without looking at the body. This is the point that the seventh canto makes, and we should think about it. We may overlook it. It's the natural tendency when making a material analysis of who is fair and who's not fair that you just look at the situation. But the Bhagavatam teaches you look at the body. If you see a material body, then there must be partiality and unfairness. That is the verdict. And if you see a spiritual body, then there's no partiality. No matter how Maya makes the situation look to your external sense, to your material senses. Let us look at the situation with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shukadeva explains, he's nirguna. He has no material qualities. So how can there be anything such as partiality as materially known? He's avyakta. He's not manifest to our material vision. He's above the material energy. And he's aja, unborn. Someone who is unborn and appears in this world doesn't have the propensity for unfairness and partiality. Unfairness and partiality is a manifestation of the material body. This point is made very clearly. And the Lord has no material body. In other words, therefore, we should think about adjusting our vision. This is the meaning of this first chapter of the seventh canon. We've got to adjust our vision if we want to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just as Yudhisthira is speaking in this verse. Na brahmanasa padabhedam atisthavasya. In the absolute truth, there's not such a thing as differentiation. This one is mine, and that is another. It's not there, because that is the nature of the absolute truth. Otherwise, the absolute truth is not absolute. When you have a material body, you are inclined to some persons and disinclined to others, based on your material likes and dislikes. A prominent example of that is marriage compatibility. You go to an astrologer, he looks at the material tendencies of the man and the woman, figures out their likes and dislikes, and says, yep, 65% good match. Or in rare cases, 75%, then the candidates for marriage rejoice, oh, our life is going to be wonderful, 75% compatibility. Or 45%. Oh no, we're already attached. And the astrology came out bad. What to do? Find another astrologer. This particular Jyotish was probably sick on the day he did the readings. So, it's about material compatibility. Srila Prabhupada said in reference to marriage that if someone's actually a devotee, whether there's material compatibility or not is not very important. Of course, we have to understand, if someone's actually a devotee, devotee is high standard. So therefore, generally, when devotees are considering marriage, there is the focus upon compatibility, material compatibility. Because, as our 27-year veteran of the Grihastha Ashram, Badahari Prabhu, will tell you, people change. How can the relationship survive the changes, the fluctuations of the material qualities? The spiritual qualities don't change, but if the spiritual qualities are unknown to us, then we'll be on the platform of material likes and dislikes. And those change in accordance with the modes of material nature. Not simply in marriage compatibility, but in friendship. People change. You change your sets of friends. In society, politics, people change, as Howard found out. Is that his name? He thought he had a good one going. 11 years he was in power. He thought, all I have to do is stress the economy, the economy, the economy, and somehow or other I'll go on for more years in office. But the people, they change. They're fickle. Let's try someone else. The new guy, he seems interesting. It was presented that when he made a trip to New York City, he went to a stripper's club and he got drunk. And then when the issue was presented to him, he just said, "Look, I'm no holy Joe. I'm just like any other Australian." And the people loved it. His poll ratings went up. "I'm no holy Joe." People said, "Great, great, good stuff." He said, "Hey, I did tell my wife I was a bit of a goose." "Yeah, I told her, I informed her, you know, I acted like a bit like a goose that night, you know." And some people appreciated him even more. "Yes, he should be our leader. Out with this present guy, in with the new guy." So in all fields of human affairs, there's this fluctuation, this changing in likes and dislikes. Because one has a material body. But Krishna has no material body. Therefore, he's not subject to all this fluctuation, partiality. When Krishna appears in this world, he is fully spiritual. Yet, he is acting apparently within this material world. But no, he's acting within the realm of his own energy, swamaya. He has his own mechanism, spiritual mechanism, for appearing within this world and acting within this world. Therefore, he's never touched by material qualities. Sambhavami atmamaya. He has his own energy, atmamaya, for manifesting his activities within this world. Therefore, there's no question of partiality. So how does this issue of partiality then seem to have some merit? The demons really get angry about their perception of a Lord being partial. Hiranyakashipu, as we said, was so angry, he would stare at the sky as if he could see Vaikuntha and the sky would smolder. In Krishna book, you'll read of so many demons accusing Krishna of being partial as they come forward to try to kill Krishna. These demons forget all about their atrocities. And Krishna has done one thing they don't understand. And they accuse him of being partial and fickle like a child. So therefore, Prithvi Maharaj is presenting this question to Sukadeva Goswami, as if he himself has a doubt. So where does this controversy of partiality come from? It comes from arupita. That Sanskrit word means you're imposing your own material perception on the Supreme Lord. You, in your daily affairs, hate it when someone imposes their trips upon you. Everyone's had that experience. You hate it. They're looking at you through the eyes, through the lens of their own complexities, their own hang-ups. This kind of syndrome ruins relationships, ruins marriages, ruins devotees' devotional careers even. Was it Triyuga was telling me, I think, yesterday about? He was listening to Rabindra Srupa explain how devotees can get into all sorts of mundane political wranglings within the Krishna conscious movement. And those political wranglings are just a symptom of their material shortcomings and anarthas inside. They don't address those anarthas, they don't address those personal shortcomings, and instead they see everything as political. It's all politics, Prabhu, it's all politics. And this way they ruin their spiritual life and the lives of others. You can always find an excuse once you start avoiding your own shortcomings. He did this, she did that, what is the reason? Because of this and that. The society of devotees is all useless. And you never look at yourself. The same thing in personal relationships. Maybe you were abused by your parents, and therefore you have a certain attitude which can ruin any future relationship, marriage or whatever. Men who had a bad father who was very brutal or excessively authoritarian to them, they resent all authority. So when that kind of man comes to Krishna consciousness, he can't handle anyone telling what to do. Anyone in any position of authority, temple president, guru, they're all seen through this lens of the abusive father. This is quite common. And so they have a problem. Such persons have a problem with anyone in any position of authority. That same hatred that they had toward their father, unconsciously or consciously, comes out in their dealings with leaders in the Krishna consciousness movement. Ladies who have been abused, which is so common these days. The statistics are, in the first world, 1 out of 4 ladies have been abused by a family member, someone they know. 1 out of 4. And so then, that experience ruins the lady's future relationships with a husband or any kind of man in any kind of role. They're like, you're going to abuse me. Sooner or later. This is arupita, imposition upon others of your own trips, shall we say, due to past experience. So the acharyas point out that we do the same thing. We make the same mistake with Krishna, arupita. We look at Krishna's pastimes through the lens of our conditioning. And this way we miss the point, we don't understand, and also we even commit offenses. That's why we don't explain Krishna's intimate pastimes to non-devotees. That's why we don't explain the intimate glories of the holy name to non-devotees. We don't even, what to speak of Ras Leela, we don't even explain Krishna stealing butter to non-devotees. Because they can't understand this. It's just Mukunchora, God is the butter thief. They don't understand that Krishna is the proprietor of everything. Yet, just to give pleasure to his devotees, he steals what already belongs to him. He dances in the middle of the forest at night with what already belongs to him. By hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, your disease of material imposition, arupita, is cleansed. Therefore, to do us great service, Pritchard Maharaj is bringing this issue up to Shukadeva Goswami. And Shukadeva Goswami congratulates him. If you can properly grasp this point, which takes some concentration and some deep thought, you'll see within yourself the tendency to accuse Krishna. If you've ever been very sick as a devotee, what is the first thing that comes into your imperfect mind? Why is Krishna letting this happen to me? Or if there's been some severe loss as a devotee, a close devotee friend or even family member of yours has left this world. Why didn't Krishna let that person, that devotee, live? He was serving Krishna, she was serving Krishna, and then he or she died. As if death is something unique. So it's a natural tendency to see some incongruity, some disequilibrium in Krishna's dealings. Just like before his departure, His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj told me that he said probably quite a few devotees are may become weak in their dedication to Krishna consciousness, seeing externally what he went through, thinking, what's the use of risking everything for Krishna, dedicating your life to Krishna's service, and then you just die? What's the use? You die in your 50s, and it looks like a very painful death, cancer. So he was telling me that this will probably shake up quite a few devotees. You know, they're thinking, if this is how Krishna treats you after a lifetime of devotional service, I don't know if I want to surrender. So, of course, with external vision, one does not see the spiritual reality. One does not see that exalted devotees are personally taken care of by Krishna. It's a mystery. Krishna keeps it mysterious. You know the example of the kitten and the rat in the mouth of the cat. When the kitten is in the mouth of the cat, its mother, the kitten is feeling affection. And when the rat is in the mouth of that same cat, the rat is feeling terror. So from the external point of view, the situation looks the same. Both the kitten and the rat are in the mouth of the cat. But you have to understand the existential position of the particular living entity. By definition, the rat, because of its situation, is feeling terror. It knows it's going to be the cat's dinner. And the kitten, by its existential position, is feeling such warmth and affection. It's in the same position, in the mouth of the cat. So similarly, a devotee and a non-devotee have completely different experiences at the time of death. Although to mundane vision, it looks the same. What does mundane vision perceive anyway? You know this concept of the peaceful death that materialists have? They all aspire to have a long life of sense gratification and exploitation and being kind just to their friends and relatives. It's very complicated these days, though, to be kind to your relatives, because divorce is so common that who are your near and dears? It's very difficult. You know, you got a second marriage, a third marriage, or maybe, well, these days, half the people don't even bother to marry. So how do you establish? Through family relations, blood relations, who's near and dear to you. Anyway, the material dream is that you have a long life of sense gratification and you're surrounded with loving persons who all support your quest for sense gratification, and you support theirs, and there's never any argument. Because sense gratification brings world peace. And then, one night, when you're very old, and there'll be no pain in your old age, when you're 75 or 85, according to the national average, one morning you just don't wake up. And that's the end, so nice. It's almost like, you know, having breakfast in bed. That's a nice experience. You just float away to whatever. That's the materialist conception. Of course, the devotee knows by the knowledge given by Lord Kapila Dev in the third canto that although from the external gross material vision, death looks peaceful for someone who just dies in their sleep, what's actually going on that you can't see? The actions on the subtle plane. Yes, sometimes, often there is excruciating pain on the gross platform. Still, most of the activity is going on the subtle platform. So someone externally, to external vision, it may seem someone is dying peacefully, has died peacefully, but you don't see the terrorism by the Yamadutas on the subtle plane. Ripping that subtle body out of the gross body. You don't see that. If we cannot understand our own birth and death, then how can we understand the transcendental glories of the Lord's birthless existence and his qualityless activities, nirguna, no material qualities? Therefore, Yudhisthira Maharaj wants to establish this Rajasuya Yajna so that everyone can see the true glories of the Supreme Lord. The example in this verse is given of the desire tree. As Jiva Goswami Prabhupada writes in his commentary, the desire tree does not think, this person is fit to worship me, but that other person is not. Then you may say, well, if that's the case, why is it that if we go to Vrindavan and sit under a tree, Kalparviksha, and we have desires, they're not fulfilled? Why shouldn't the desire tree fulfill everyone's desires, whether you're Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, or, you know, Bhakta Jeremy? Why not? That would be being equal to everyone. Whomever lays down under the Kalpa Viksha, the desire tree, has their desire fulfilled. But that's not the case. Therefore, isn't that partiality? But we overlook an essential point. The desire tree is satisfied with all who properly serve it. And what are we thinking? What does it matter whether I properly serve it or not? I'm laying under the desire tree. Presto, where is the fulfillment of my desires? Similarly, what does it matter what my attitude is in serving Krishna? I've approached Krishna, so where are all the material benefits and benedictions? We completely leave ourselves out of the equation. We leave our own purity and worthiness out of the equation. This is the Western disease, which shows up in all arenas of research, investigation. Because they don't understand the self, they don't understand consciousness, therefore they can't understand the role that they subjectively play in all their research and investigations into how the universe works. They're always caught up in the external. They have to be. They don't understand the internal. They don't understand their consciousness. They don't understand their spiritual existence. We say that the desire tree is equal to everyone, but implicit in that statement, the correct statement, is that according to your consciousness, the desire tree will reciprocate with you. In other words, if you make yourself favorable, if you properly serve the desire tree responds. And if you're unqualified, the desire tree doesn't respond. That's not partiality, because everyone has the chance to become qualified. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Samaham Sarabhuteshu, Name Dvesvastina Priya. I am equal to all living entities. I don't favor one or have aversion to the other. But one who becomes a devotee, what can I do? I give that person special treatment. The demon says, aha, there it is, the bribe. You become a devotee, you feed Vishnu some laddus. We are demons, we don't do that. We play fair. We don't make any offerings to the Supreme Lord. We stand on our own 2 feet. But the devotees, the weak devotees, the spinely devotees, they're preparing these nice offerings. They offer to the Lord just to get what they want, and they sway the Lord in that way. Why don't the devotees just be real men, be real women, stand up on their own? That's how demons think. And even today, they think the same thing. 7 offerings a day. What's the point of all that? Get out and get a real job. Yes, we have a real job. The real job is serving Krishna. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. The 9 processes of devotional service. That's the real job. Distributing Krishna's glories to others. That is kirtan. Prabhupada has chanted. The chanting is recorded in the form of books. And you distribute the books, so you are also chanting. That is the real job, to distribute Krishna's glories. So, Krishna makes it clear. This is the way the system is. Anyone can become dear to me just by doing what I say. But the demons overlook that point. And they just say, you should be equal to everyone, whether one's a demon or not. Everyone should get the same result. And Krishna is simply saying, become my devotee. Everyone can become my devotee. You'll get the special treatment. Isn't that fair? And the demons say, never mind whether we become a devotee or not. Just treat everybody equally. Now, you yourself won't treat everyone like that. You all... whether in your material life or in your devotee life, you have those who are closer to you than others. And so why do you expect Krishna not to have favorites? You have favorites. But Krishna gives everyone the right to be a favorite. That's the difference. You don't give everyone the right to be a favorite. You think, oh, well, you know, we have to be able to get along, and your personality has to, you know, mix well with mine, you know. We have to share the same, you know, illusions. And and the stars have to be aligned properly, and so many conditions are there for conditioned existence. But Krishna gives everyone the chance to be a favorite. He gives an open invitation to everyone. Sarvadhamam prachaja, mamekam sharanam vraja. That's not like a private closeted deal. He's broadcasting to everyone, especially when Krishna comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He lets it be known in every town and village. The devotees have gone on traveling sangatam, spreading Krishna's open invitation. Everyone can approach Krishna and become Krishna's favorite. So therefore, where's the partiality? It's simply a fact that there is a system in place given by the Supreme Lord. If you go according to that system, you become a favorite. But everyone can participate properly in that system. Furthermore, as Srila Prabhupada points out in the Krishna book, you cannot be partial to one, you meaning Krishna, cannot be partial to one and not interested in others, because you are sitting in everyone's heart as the super soul and giving everyone the respective results of his fruit of activities. You give every living entity the chance to enjoy this material world as he desires. No matter what body you take, the Lord is there as Paramatma, super soul. The Lord doesn't say, oh, now you're in a pig's body, I won't go there with you. Now you're in a grasshopper's body, I won't go there with you. Whatever body you take, the super soul is there with the Atma. Of course, the super soul is unaffected, whereas the Atma, being tiny, becomes overwhelmed by the illusory energy and identifies with that body. Still, the super soul is there. Isn't that fair? And no matter what situation you're in, the Lord is giving you a chance to fulfill your desires. You give every living entity the chance to enjoy this material world as he desires. We are the ones who have brought this materialistic civilization down upon ourselves. We have brought having a material body upon ourselves. Krishna is simply fulfilling our desires to enjoy the material world. And look at the result of that desire. Do we have to blame ourselves? But it's not that the super soul in the heart is simply fulfilling your desires to enjoy the material world. He is constantly telling you to turn to him. You are sitting in the body along with the living entity, giving him the results of his own actions, as well as opportunities to turn toward your devotional service by developing Krishna consciousness. So the two things are happening simultaneously. This is the action of the Lord in the heart. Fulfilling desires to enjoy the material world, providing situations that are the results of your desires and actions, as well as providing opportunities to become Krishna conscious. Therefore, on book distribution, the Lord sends his devotees who are working with the super soul. Whether you know it or not, you are working with the super soul. And you are aiding the super soul in giving opportunities for people to turn to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada once explained how the Sankirtan exchange happens. According to the consciousness of the Sankirtan devotee, Krishna within the heart of the person you're approaching causes that person to be receptive. Because the Sankirtan devotee is Krishna conscious, the Lord in the heart is pleased, and then the Lord in the heart of the person you're approaching says, this is a nice person, you should take the book. Of course, Krishna is independent, as Sankirtan devotees always find out. There are days when the Sankirtan devotees think, oh, I really heard my japa today, I was dancing in ecstasy in kirtan, I didn't overeat at breakfast, what a big day I'm going to have out there. You've done like this, Sukanti Rana? It's all clear. It's going to be, I will be number one today. And then you go out, and every person you talk to is just like the meanest person you'd ever meet. And then the next day, you think, oh, my mind was really overwhelmed during japa. Oh, I was having bad dreams, memories of conditioned life. Oh, I'm, having a tough time with this devotee in the ashram. I wish he'd go take a permanent trip to Holy Dham. Oh, it's going to be tough out there. Oh, my consciousness. And then you go out, and irrespective of your consciousness, everyone's taking a book. everyone has experienced that. So Krishna is showing you he's independent. Now that doesn't mean you should just neglect your japa, neglect maintaining your consciousness, because anyway, Krishna's independent, he'll do what he's gonna do, so it doesn't matter. No. A devotee is always eager to increase the level of purity. And generally, it is so that over a long period of time, you can see that Krishna reciprocates with devotees who are dedicated to elevating their consciousness of him. Still, the Lord will always show he's independent. See, Indra had that point when the Brijabasis were being convinced by Krishna not to worship Indra, but to worship Govardhan Hill. As Nanda Maharaj, as Krishna was presenting arguments to Nanda Maharaj, Karma Mimamsa arguments, that you don't have to worship demigods because you just do the right thing and the result automatically comes. There's no question of appeasing any personality. It's just the way the laws of nature work. Mechanistically, you do a pious activity, you get a pious result. Why are you so indebted to Indra just because of the rain? Nanda Maharaj had said, you know, the existence of we Vaishyas, cowherd men, depends on the rain, because the rain falls and makes the grass grow, and then the cows have grass to eat, and our existence depends on those cows. So therefore, we have to worship Indra. And what did Krishna say? Indra, why do you need to worship him? What's the big deal about his sending rain? Yes, it rains on the land, but doesn't it also rain on the ocean? We know what is needed. That's the proof. There's no need to worship Indra. The ocean never does any yajnas. The ocean doesn't need any rain, and it still gets it. See, when no one can compete with Krishna when he wants to word juggle. So Krishna is independent, yet a devotee thinks, let me do everything nicely for the pleasure of my Lord, and the results are up to the Lord. Srila Prabhupada said, during his first year in the USA, he thought, let me just try for a year, and then I'll go back to India. My Guru Maharaj has ordered me to preach in the West. I will try against these impossible odds, and then I'll return. He tried his best, not thinking, well, since I'm going to return in a year, yeah, I'll just give a half-hearted effort. No. He risked everything for Krishna, made a 100% pure devotional effort. And then, because of that 100% pure devotional effort, Krishna reciprocated in amazing ways. Not immediately, though. This issue of the Lord's being partial or impartial is very important for our spiritual well-being. Because to material vision, sometimes devotees go through circumstances that are very materially unappealing or very severe. And you may question, how can Krishna let this happen to a devotee? Therefore, we have to learn how to see with spiritual vision. And Yudhisthira, to help that, seeing with spiritual vision, wants to do this Rajasuya Yajna, so everyone can clearly understand Krishna's omnipotence and Krishna's freedom from any material qualities.